It's your take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, ESPN News, and you can just ask your smart speakers to play ESPN Radio. I'm Jason Fitz. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. We're going to start with the headline that you need. We're only giving you one. We're getting right back to it. The one headline that you need to know right now comes back to Major League Baseball. The MLBPA has decided they will not take another pay cut. They've, quote, resoundingly rejected the league's plan to begin the season, according to a statement Thursday from Union Executive Director Tony Clark. The statement came after a two-hour conference call of the association's executive board and several other Major League Baseball Players Association player leaders, and one day after the league rejected a proposal from the players to play 114 games with full prorated salaries. The league wants a drastically reduced schedule in order for owners to be able to pay players on a per-game basis. This is all coming down to the fact that every time they play with nobody in the stands, the teams will lose more money. So in an effort to try and lose less, the owners want to play less games, but the players don't want to put themselves at risk for injury or COVID-19 for a small fraction of what they'd usually earn. In the meantime, you can go to ESPN.com, where right now on the front page, there's an incredibly good article written by Jeff Passan that breaks down the actual numbers that this is coming down to. So it shows you in the grand scheme of a multi-billion dollar business what they're really fighting over. That's the headlines that you need. First Take, Your Take. We're letting you guys chime in. All of this conversation about Drew Brees, the conversation about the NFL's conversations they're having about social justice, and frankly, the openness of football players and their voice right now that we haven't seen necessarily in the past. Many of you are chiming in, so we want to let that continue. We're going to let that continue. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Before we get to any more of First Take, let's get a little more of your take in. Luther in Brooklyn, what do you got, man? Thanks for calling the show.
Hi, good morning. I'm sorry, good afternoon. I'm calling in regards to the whole Drew Brees fiasco. I just feel like as though the whole situation started, and I feel like Drew Brees has been, you know, given the death sentence, which I feel is kind of unfair because he has already received a whole lot of backlash. And I feel like he basically answered a genuine question that he made a mistake because he was naive to the fact of the issue, which is not kneeling in regards to the flag, but instead kneeling because of the injustice of society towards black men. I accept his apology. You know, he seems like he's very trying really hard, very genuine. I look at his track history in terms of what he's done in, I would say, pretty primarily dominant black city in New Orleans. I would also look at the fact that he has a good track record. You know, he hasn't been involved in any type of issue. And the fact that when I seen the interview, I thought to myself, like, okay, this is someone that is answering the question. He never expected it. That shows me that he's being genuine. And him being so elite and superstar, I'm sure he understands that if he says anything that's out of ordinary, he would receive a backlash. That's why I felt that he was genuine, because even though he knew it, and he still said it because he felt like it was genuine and that it would be not a big deal. But I don't.
Well, and thanks for your take on it, Luther. I think the backlash comes from a few different spots on it. One, when he said it, to your point, he should have expected to be asked about it. I mean, you're not doing an interview right now going on any sports show and expecting, or any show in general when you're an athlete, and expecting not to be asked about what's going on in the world. So I have a hard time believing that, you know, he was caught off guard. Too, media training essentially is something that Drew Brees has been great at. Let's keep in mind that he's going to be the heir apparent on NBC, right? Like, he's so good with the media and so good at saying and doing the right things that NBC's already signed him up to be the heir apparent for Sunday Night Football at some point for their broadcast when his playing career is over. So he understands the power of the microphone and what he's doing. I think the problem is, and you're right, like, maybe there's too much outrage, but I would argue that it's only been a couple of days, number one, so it hasn't been that long since what he said. And the other part of it is what he said was so incredibly hurtful to people that he's teammates with, that he's essentially family with every single day. I think that's a big part of this. I mean, the immediate reaction of his teammates, who have since accepted his apology, yes, but the way the news cycle works, I mean, combine all of that with the fact of how sensitive right now the world is to what's going on, how much we're looking for everybody, myself included, to do a better job of using our voice. Like, I think that that's part, it all sort of adds up to get us to where we are now. I do believe that this too shall pass for Drew Brees, but I don't think it's unfair to look at it and continue to ask some of the whys and hows and how did we get here as we look at the apology in what it is. So we'll keep taking your take. It's time for Straight Talk, though, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. The Straight Talk came from NFL players bonding together to bring their own message. This is a message from NFL players across the league.
It's been 10 days since George Floyd was brutally murdered.
How many times do we need to ask you to listen to your players?
What will it take
for one of us to be murdered by police brutality?
What if I was George Floyd?
If I was George Floyd?
What if I was George Floyd?
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 I am George Floyd.
I am Breonna Taylor.
I am Ahmaud Arbery.
I am Eric Garner.
I am McCormick Dunn.
I am Tamir Rice.
I am Trayvon Martin.
I am Walter Scott.
I am Michael Brown
Jr. I am Samuel Du Bois.
I am Frank Smart.
I'm Philip White.
I am Jordan Baker.
We will not be silenced.
We assert our right
to peacefully protest.
It shouldn't take this long to admit.
So, on behalf of the National Football League,
this is what we, the players,
would like to hear you state.
We, the National Football League,
condemn racism and the systematic oppression of black people.
We, the National Football League,
admit wrong and silencing our players from peacefully protesting.
We, the National Football League,
believe black lives matter.
Black lives matter.
Black lives matter.
Black lives matter.
That's Straight Talk. Straight Talk Wireless. Everything for less, only at Walmart. And it's different than what we're used to. We rarely see NFL players speaking out to this level. We're used to it in other sports, not in the NFL. And that raised a question. Is this the right course of action NFL players should be taking? Stephen A. and Max broke it down today on First Take.
It absolutely is the right course of action, and I have no problem with it whatsoever, and I think those players should be applauded for taking the action. What I would say is to NFL, is to a lot of these NFL players, with all due respect, what the hell took you so long? Eric Garner happened in 2014. Tamir Rice, if I remember correctly, happened in 2014. The Walter Scott shooting happened in 2015. Colin Kaepernick happened in 2016. President Donald Trump and his talking about firing all those sons of bitches happened in 2017. We are now in 2020. And so when we want to look at things from a societal perspective, as particularly as it emanates from professional athletes, calling folks out to do more, to act more, and things of that nature, I think we need to also embrace that while pointing out we'd like you to continue to do so as well. We haven't had to say that about LeBron James or a plethora of NBA players because they've done so. But the NFL players certainly had an opportunity. I would like to remind everybody that when Colin Kaepernick took a knee, initially only around 11 players joined him. A year later, or so a few months later, when President Trump said what he said, even provoking Jerry Jones and the Dallas Cowboys to take a knee on Thursday Night Football, that was in September of 2017, and 200 players approximately joined them that weekend. Last time I checked, there's over 1,600 players in the National Football League. 200 out of 1,600? I mean, come on now. And so when we're looking at the media and people like myself and others, whether you want us to speak out and step forward and speak and say things that we want to say, of course we need to do that. And certainly we have and we will continue to do so. I'm not just talking about myself. I'm talking about any person in media, particularly any person of African-American descent that obviously, these kind of incidents resonate with us far more profoundly than anyone could possibly imagine outside of the black community. But the bottom line is this. We've been doing it. We will continue to do it. The professional athletes who have been directly insulted, who have been directly affected, who, if they came together in unison, could have profound impact, have refrained from doing so. And so when I see a video like this, I'm incredibly happy that they've done it. I hope it sparks something inside of them to make even more of them come together. I love what I continuously have seen throughout the years from Richard Sherman. I'm a huge fan of his, along with a plethora of other players, because I think they're highly intelligent. They're knowledgeable. They've got a heart. They've got courage. They bring a lot to the table, but we need to see more of that from them as well. I'm not talking about them individually. I mean, we need to see more Richard Shermans of the world, more of those guys coming together, not just us. That's what I wanted to say about that.
I thought it was very powerful.
I know a lot of people say that today, but I want to be specific as to why I think it was powerful, why it is powerful. Number one, talking to white people, and these are the hearts and minds we're trying to change. Not the bad apples, the incorrigibles. Look, if it really is America, love it or leave it for you and love it the way it used to be, right? Make it the way it was when black people were lesser than by law. Then if you really feel like America, love it or leave it, the brilliance of America is love it, so change it. But if you really feel America, love it or leave it, get out. We don't want you here because we're Americans. For the others who may not know any better, whose hearts may be in the right place, they've been misinformed, underinformed. They haven't had proper incentive to be informed. I think this is powerful for two reasons. One, the content. Stephen A., remember that scene from Do the Right Thing when John Turturro's character is saying racist stuff in the pizza shop and Spike Lee, yeah, who works for his family as a delivery guy, says, why do you talk like that? Yep. All your favorite celebrities are black. Magic, who's your favorite basketball player? Magic Johnson. Who's your favorite actor? Eddie Murphy. Then they argue about who his favorite musician is. He claims it's Bruce Springsteen, but Spike's like, yep, come on, it's Prince. I know it's Prince. The point is, and he says, well, they're different. They're special. They're different. They're not just black. They're more than that. Well, this video is telling people who maybe have some idea like that, okay, you can't empathize with George Floyd. What if it were me? What if it was your favorite player? I'm George Floyd, and there's a knee on my neck, and I can't breathe. Then you care, don't you? Right, because we're people just like you. You feel like you know us somehow, but you don't know George Floyd. So I think it's powerful on that level. And I also think it's powerful because it shows. Why did Drew Brees come out and apologize, really? The pressure, I believe, it's my conjecture, but Drew Brees is a leader. And he knows he will be unable, forget about just the social pressure on him, which I'm sure contributed, but he'll be unable to lead a team that's largely African-American if this is the way his teammates feel. So when now players feel emboldened because the atmosphere is right to not just accept, oh, yes, of course, we all respect the flag because, of course, America's great no matter what. Our people were enslaved, and then you take it all the way through Reconstruction, Jim Crow, and even today when you see George Floyd. But never mind that. It's great. It's good and right. No, wait a minute, Drew. That's not the way we feel, and you're tone deaf. Now, it also exerts pressure on white players in leadership positions to say, oh, wait a minute. If I want to be a part of this thing, I got to get with the program. And even if I don't understand it, I have to have the humility to learn about it at least. I think it was very powerful.
First, take your take on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. Watch new Shower Sessions videos now at youtube.com/progressive. I'm Jason Fitz. I'm going to veer off for 2 seconds and just say this, a peek behind the curtain. When you guys call in, my buddy James is our producer, and he's the call screener. So when you guys call in, you talk to James at first. I can hear you guys sometimes when you're calling James. Be nice, all right? He's too nice of a human being. So when you're calling and you want to yell at me, you're actually yelling at somebody that's back there doing a lot of jobs, working his tail off. I won't stand for it. So if you want to call the show and you want to be mad at somebody, you want to be mad at me, whatever, I'm going to tell James to start hanging up on y'all. If you can't be nice and human to him, he doesn't deserve to be treated any less than that. If you're going to call this show, you're going to be nice to the people that answer the phones. I will demand that of every single person that works with this show and that is involved with the show. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. That's how you do it, but you're going to be nice. Paul Feinbaum joining us now on the Shell Penzo Performance Line. Paul's always nice from the Paul Feinbaum Show. Paul, thanks for the time, man. I wanted to get you on because there's so much college football conversation, even around what we're seeing in the social justice conversation as well. So you have an issue like Mike Norvell, the new head coach at Florida State, who says he spoke to his players, but his star players say that's not true. When you're looking at the world we're in right now, how important is communication between coach and players in these instances?
It's essential, Fitz, and you and I both know because we've covered college football for some time that coaches are not always transparent, they're not always honest, and they have no intention of being. And this week, all of that changed. Any coach who tries to mislead, lie, mistreat a football player or a group of players is going to get nailed. And I think that may be one of the most important moments of the aftermath of of the last 10 days since Minneapolis. And, you know, I mean, this, it was just crystal clear to everyone what was going on down in Tallahassee. And it wasn't even a big deal. It was a coach who was trying to get too much credit for doing nothing. And, you know, coaches were issuing statements, some powerful, most not. And Mike Norvell, who's a good coach, he was at Memphis last year. Now he's at FSU. He just ended up with all kinds of excrement all over his face.
Well, in a world where, frankly, Paul, these guys are the highest paid teachers in their state across the board, right? So, and it's not just Mike. I mean, you've got Clemson, which is usually a program that sits so far above board and seems like it's so perfect. And then you have some of the stories we've heard come out of there. Like, at some point, what should we be expecting coaches to come out and do in this world to get ahead of these things and to be more transparent?
I'm glad you mentioned Clemson, Fitz, because for all of the flack that Drew Brees received this week, and I think most reasonable people agree he was dead wrong, tone deaf, insensitive, and he's addressed it. And we've hashed that one out. But the one person I haven't heard anything from since the Danny Perriman story came out is Dabo Swinney. Danny Perriman is the assistant head coach down there who got outed in this article, thanks to a social media post by a former walk-on. And I'm in shock. He addressed the media early in the week and did what Dabo Swinney always does. He talked about having faith, and it's done very well for him. But you know, what about this? Why, you know, this is a classic case on a Southern campus that a player used the N-word. Now, again, we don't have time for that debate right now. But the coach threw it back at him, which is bad enough. But the fact that you know, we really haven't heard anything about it from Dabo since then. I'm mystified. I know Danny Perriman, by the way. I've known him 30 years. I sent him a note the other morning. Like, can you give me some context on this? I mean, I wasn't looking for some manifesto. I just wanted him to say to me via text or phone call or whatever, I really did something terrible, and let me call you up and tell you about it. He are you ready for this? He sent me another thing. The sports information director's name is, you know, Jack Jones, and here is his contact information. I mean, which showed and told me he still doesn't get it.
That's alarming to me, because at some point, think of what in general coaches ask their students, their athletes. We say student athlete all the time. They say the student athlete is supposed to represent the school in whatever they do. Well, shouldn't teacher coaches also be held to some higher standard as teacher coaches to be representing the school with everything they do in their actions?
Of course. And that's why, I mean, this is moving so quickly. And I was asked somewhere, you know, this week, what does this moment in time feel like? And it's hard to describe because it's going so fast. I mean, this is, you know, when this started a couple of days ago, I mean, there were some critics who said, okay, this will be a 2-3-4 day story. No, it's not. This is a moment in time. And you know it because you talk about it every single day here for many, many hours. And I think too many coaches are watching over their reading glasses and seeing the Norvell situation and saying, well, thank goodness that wasn't me. And what's going to happen here in a couple of days, weeks, or months when you have problems with COVID, as we've seen in Alabama and other places already? I mean, they haven't even started the voluntary workouts yet, and we're seeing, you know, pretty decent numbers. And players know what's going on, and the university won't, because the university, I mean, Fitz, come on. Most college football programs are about as transparent as Vladimir Putin in Russia. I mean, they don't give you the time of day because they don't feel like they have to. But now, you know, there are voices inside that program. I mean, I think it's going to be scary to some of these older coaches who simply are not relatable to young people, other than to go into their homes and lie and cajole and tell them what a great education they're going to get, and then forget about them the second they got on campus, other than to either start them or forget them.
And you mentioned, Paul, the COVID issue, and obviously it's still facing so many. We saw the reports yesterday that Alabama gets back on campus and has a group of players test positive. So what was your reaction to that?
Yeah, it was interesting because Yeah, I had been looking at pictures from friends of mine in Alabama who were, you know, not far from where these young guys were practicing, and there were 25, 30 of them gathered around. And you know, we later found out several of them had been among the positive tests. They just didn't know it yet. So, I mean, there's a lot of risk. You and I are all for college football. Come on. We want to see the season. We want to see it in its entirety. But I think the inconsistency on testing, I think the lack of transparency, and knowing college football, coaches like I do and you do, their inability to deal head on with the truth makes me very concerned about what's going to happen late in the season when you get a couple of positive test results, and coaches may try to cover that up. And I'm sure somebody out in the hinterlands is going, there's no way. Well, yes, there is a way. I've covered the sport for a very long time.
Paul, I love your honesty, man. I love the way you approach it. I hope we get to see each other at college football games this fall, but I'm with you, man. These are strange times, and I think we're looking at an absolute change in the world that we cover so much. I appreciate your time, Paul. Thanks so much. Hope you guys are safe, and appreciate you hanging out with me.
Thanks, kid. Always a pleasure, man. Talk to you soon.
Be sure to check out the Paul Feinbaum Show. If you're missing baseball, tune in Sunday night for an MLB Classic. Game 7 of the 2016 World Series between the Cubs and Indians, presented by Progressive Insurance. Coverage begins at 8 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app. Coming up, how important is it for LeBron to speak out about social issues? First Take, discuss that. You'll hear it next. First Take, your take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM, Channel 80, and ESPN News. Or you can just ask your smart speaker to play ESPN Radio. In case you didn't know, you can do that. I'm Jason Fitz. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests join us on the Shell Penzel Performance Line. If you missed any of the show so far, go check it out on demand in the First Take Your Take podcast. Really good stuff there. Today's, we've had several guests. Bobby Marks talked a lot about the NBA playoff and the NBA in general with their tone. Field Yates with some great stuff on the NFL. And we just talked to Paul Feinbaum on college football. So you can catch all of that in the First Take Your Take podcast. You don't want to miss that. We're taking your take as we go through, and we'll get back to a little bit of First Take. But I want to give you guys the chance to chime in first. Arnie in New Jersey. Arnie, thanks for calling the show, man. What's your take?
Thank you very much for having me.
Heck yeah, man.
Well, I'd just like to state that this whole thing with Drew Brees has gone so viral. It's incredible. I mean, Drew Brees is a staple of his community with all the money he's donated, with the storm, the things he's done for the community, rebuilding houses and stuff like that. He's been what you would call a good soldier and stuff. And some people don't like the statement. Some people don't mind it. The fact of the matter, I'm a 71-year-old Vietnam veteran. I have 3 Purple Hearts and I got other medals. That don't mean anything to me. What means something to me is people that want to stand up for the flag. He doesn't want to disrespect the flag. It has nothing to do with any of the other social issues as far as that. He doesn't want that to be part of the social issue, the flag. He just wants people to stand up for America. The other social issues with just George Floyd is terrible. My son's a police officer. And there's to disgrace these cops that they call themselves police officers. They're all locked in jail and throw away the key. All these cops that do this stuff, they ought to be thrown off the force. And they need better psychiatric planning when they interview these cops. The other thing is that these people are protesting. They're out there protesting, and what are they doing? They're out there looting and breaking into innocent people's stores and causing all sorts of damage to police cars and stuff. That's not part of America. That's not part of the protest. It's supposed to be a peaceful protest. That's those people turning to criminals.
Arnie, you've given me a lot there. And I want to start, most importantly, by saying thank you for your service. Because I say it every time that we're on during Memorial Day, Labor Day, 4th of July, every time we have the opportunity to talk about the service men and women, I say this frequently. Michael Luke Jr. and I say it every time we work together on a holiday. I'm able to talk about sports because people braver, stronger, better than me fought for that ability. And I respect the hell out of that. I have to start by saying that. That's most important. For Drew Brees, at this point, you're right. He is a pillar of the community. I believe that he's apologized for his words, either because he didn't mean them or because he didn't say them in a word that got the way that got his message across. That's why he's apologizing. At some point, you know, through all of it, I don't think it's necessarily just what you're saying. It's also the context of what you're not saying. It's the context of what it means to so many other people. As I have learned over the course of the last weekend, I didn't know a week ago. You know, I've spent much of my life saying things like, I don't see color. Like, that doesn't even affect me. And now I've talked to so many of the people in my life that are black that I love and respect, and I found out how hurtful that can be. Sometimes well-intentioned words can have hurt. And even through the course of the anthem and the conversation that it brings, I respect your take on it 1,000%, that's what it's about to you. I will also tell you that I know many people that are armed, former members of the armed services, that don't agree with that take too. So there are a lot of different ways to see all of it. But if we're just looking at the words of Drew Brees, intended or not, the way he made his point caused hurt to many of the people he calls brother, to people that feel like he stands with them, beside them. And by speaking for himself and not in a way that reflects something that's hurting so many of the people around him, that can in and of itself be hurtful. I think that's a big part of why we've seen apologies. Two apologies to a statement means either he said it wrong or he didn't mean what he said. Donovan in Virginia, what's your take?
Hey, what's going on, man? Me being a conspiracy theorist, I feel like Drew Brees got paid to make that original statement, because you're not going to tell me Drew Brees doesn't understand what's going on. This man lives in New Orleans. This man from Lynchburg, so he gives back to the community, so he sees what's going on. Now, like you just said, if he doesn't understand what he said as far as, like, you know, speaking for everybody, then that's what it is. It's just like he was speaking for himself. But you're not going to tell me this man does not understand what's going on, being around black people, whether it's off the field, on the field. Like, he knows what's going on, man. That's what I'm saying. And the Saints going to go shotgun every play, because they coming for his head. This is you.
Well, look, I mean, I'm not much of a conspiracy theorist. I will admit that. But a quick Google search shows me that Drew Brees has made $244.7 million in his career. So I don't know how much you'd have to pay somebody that's made $244.7 million in their career. That's according to Business Insider. But when you've made $244.7 million in your career, it would take a hell of a payout to ruin my reputation, or not even ruin it. Just let me say that better, to drag my reputation through the mud, because that's what happened here. So, you know, at some point, $244.7 million, man, that I don't know a dollar amount that would make me want to go through what Drew Brees has gone through over the last few days because of what he said. So hard for me to buy into the conspiracy theory, but I do love the interesting thought on it. We'll keep taking your take, but there was some first take today, and it was an important conversation about LeBron, because realistically, Laura Ingraham, remember, she's the one that told LeBron to shut up and dribble. She's the one that sort of led the stick to sports conversation around LeBron, but she's also someone that came out and defended Drew Brees' right to speak his mind for what he believes, which led to a conversation involving Stephen A. about the importance of LeBron James reacting to social issues.
Well, I think it's incredibly pivotal, particularly in this day and age, for obvious reasons. But the first thing I'd like to do is address what he had to say about Laura Ingraham. I think he was right on point. And I thought her response was weak. And here's why I say that. And I usually don't call anybody out, but in the media, but in this particular case, I think it's justifiable only in terms of her response, not trying to get involved in the minutiae. All I'm saying is that she's a pundit on the air on Fox News every weeknight. Your answer to what LeBron has to say, or what Drew Brees had to say, is, what is it? He's allowed to have his view about what kneeling in the flag means to him. I mean, he's a person. What are you talking about? We all know that. Why don't you just tell us the sky is blue? You literally, meaning her, dissect what people say and what it means to you every day. But in this particular instance, when it came to Drew Brees, and in particular what LeBron had to say, there's no response directly addressing what Drew Brees said, how it affects the disenfranchised community in this nation, and the uproar that has emanated from it. I thought that was a relatively weak response on her part. Now, getting to LeBron James, it's incredibly important. He's intelligent. He's accomplished, and more importantly, he's powerful. You're not going to squash LeBron James and just render him muted and meaningless. You're not going to do that to him. He's worth about $1 billion. He's the greatest player in the world at this particular moment in time. At age 35, in his 17th year in the league, he was still a top two leading candidate for league MVP honors, and his philanthropy off the court is just phenomenal in terms of the school that he's built in hometown of Akron, Ohio, the issues that he's willing to tackle, his business acumen, what he has accomplished, and more importantly, the class that he has shown throughout his illustrious 17-year career. I will repeat for everybody that wants to listen to this. LeBron James is on the cover of Sports Illustrated at the age of 17 as the chosen one, an iconic athlete, incredibly well known in the age of the advent of social media and beyond, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and all of this other stuff. The only thing you can point to that LeBron James has definitively done wrong in his entire professional career is airing the decision when he had announced he was leaving Cleveland the first time to go to Miami. And there was nothing. We have not even heard so much of LeBron James getting a speeding ticket in 17 years. Has never been in a police blotter, has never conducted himself with anything but the highest level of class. He has been the embodiment of everything we have fantasized about as black individuals in this nation in terms of being a role model. Now, I might have some issues with him in terms of free throw shooting and his sensitivity to criticism on the basketball court. But my God, am I proud of the brother that he is, uplifting brothers along the way, the Rich Pauls, the Maverick Carters, Randy Mims, and all of these guys. As great and as phenomenal as they are, we all know that the likelihood of them being as significant as they are would not exist if it wasn't for LeBron James using his cachet to uplift those around him and beyond. This dude is something special. And the Laura Ingrahams of the world and others have nowhere to go when he addresses them other than to address his point. If you're not addressing his point, you can't touch him because he's given you no means nor any license to pull that off. That is the point that needs to be made about this here.
First, take your take on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. The point that needs to be made in my mind is at what point did somebody being successful or not successful as an athlete mean that they're not allowed to speak on whatever they want to speak on, however they want to speak on? Sure, they'll face the consequence when people don't agree with their views. But whenever we decided as a society that it was our right to tell somebody what they have to stick to, what they can talk about, and what topics they're not allowed to talk about, if you don't like it, don't consume it. Just consume what you like from somebody. But if you go to their social media and tell them what they can or can't talk about, who gave you that right? That's the question I'll never understand. Coming up, Stephen A. asked former UFC heavyweight champion Daniel Cormier about how fighters would react if something like what happened with Drew Brees happened in the UFC. You'll hear a really interesting conversation next. First Take, Your Take, ESPN Radio, ESPN News. Take Your Take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM, Channel 80, and ESPN News. You can also ask your smart speakers to play ESPN Radio. I'm Jason Fitz. We've been taking your take on it. We've been talking a lot about sort of where we are in conversation as a country and where we are in conversation across sports as Drew Brees and his apology, his second apology to his comments, continue to cause reaction. But it also causes a real question about other sports. You know, we talked earlier today, not only to Bobby Marks and Field Yates, but one of the conversations we've had is, why does the NBA seem to be so much more in tune, white and black, coach and player, owner and GM? Why do they seem to be more in tune to the same message in the same way? So it does raise a question about UFC. So we're going to get to UFC preview brought to you by Progressive Insurance. And that came in the form of Daniel Cormier joining First Take because during their conversation, Stephen A. flat out asked Cormier how fighters would react if someone spoke out like Brees in such a tone-deaf manner. This is Cormier and Stephen A. talking about that very thing.
We've been talking a lot about what transpired with Drew Brees in the NFL. One of the things that we've never touched on is the culture that exists in the UFC. If somebody had made that kind of error, that kind of mistake, came across as that tone-deaf at a time like this in the UFC, how would the climate be for that person in the sport? How would guys react to that? Can you give us some insight with that?
I think you would see the same type of reaction that Drew Brees got, you know, and for me, as a big time New Orleans Saints fan, a guy from Louisiana, it hurt to see that he could make that type of error in this time, because history has shown that Drew Brees has been an advocate for the city of New Orleans, the state of Louisiana, and, you know, African-American people. But to not understand where you are and where we are today as a country and make that statement was it was insane, and it was hard to see him do that. But if anyone did that in the UFC, you would have the same type of reaction. We would hold him accountable. We would ask the questions, why would you say something like that? How at this time could you make such a statement? And then we would just try to hold that person accountable. And I believe that the action in regard to the action from the top would be swift. And we would come to that conclusion very quickly, as you've seen with Drew Brees and the people in the NFL, people coming to ask the question as to why that statement was made, especially at this time.
First, take your take on ESPN Radio. It's just one of the interesting things is that every sport has the ability to handle social issues in general so differently and does handle them so differently. Part of it, though, has to be not just about the way the businesses are run. I mean, structure has to matter. Dana White runs the UFC by himself, so he doesn't have to answer to a bunch of different owners, whereas in the NFL they do. But part of it also comes back to not just what ownership expects, but what they expect from their fans. I mean, realistically, no matter what you're doing in professional sports, at some level, you understand that it is the fans that keep your operation going. So what you should be doing in a world of broadest out of the audience is appealing to that fan. Whether you're talking about a retail store, whether you're talking about a store or a sport, at some level, your main client is the person that spends money on your brand. So what we've seen in the past, I think in tone, has a lot to do with the perception of what fans expect from different sports. NBA fans tend to be younger. NBA fans, we've learned this in covering the NBA for SportsCenter on Snapchat. You talk about the average age of the NBA fan and what they want to consume. It's typically quick highlights, and it's star-driven. It's player-driven to a younger audience. When you talk about the NFL, it's longer conversations. It's more about quarterbacks, and it's to a much different audience. So each of these businesses is just trying to figure out what it means for their audience. You know, when you start to think about that, It explains why UFC can have a bit of a different approach to this, by the way. The UFC preview brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Watch new shower sessions videos now at youtube.com/progressive. The UFC can be as progressive as Dana White wants to be because Dana White is the sole owner of the UFC. Also, Dana White can by himself make a decision of what he thinks UFC consumers want. He can make that decision without having to have a negotiation or a conversation. That's not the same for the NFL. Roger Goodell only has a limited amount of power, remembering that, in fact, he's paid by 32 owners. 32 owners that each have to make individual conversations for themselves, individual decisions on how they're comfortable having their business run based on what they think their clients, their customers, their fans are willing to support and willing to consume. That, I think, is one of the craziest things we've seen over the last few days that does make a difference to the way the NFL is going to approach it this fall. We've seen more uniformity in message than ever before. I mean, whether you're looking at the Colts and you're looking at, you know, Chris Ballard coming out and speaking out, when you start to see the GM come out and speak about these issues, when you see the Jags come out as a team and speak about these issues, when you see Mark Davis come out and speak about these issues, what you're seeing are owners, front office employees, coaches, and players all speaking the same way. That's not something we've necessarily seen publicly from the NFL, and it's a reason that I think we're going to see a different version of these conversations in the NFL than we've seen in past years. First Take Your Take on ESPN Radio. Will Cain will keep saying more about Drew Brees and his second apology. That's coming up next on The Will Cain Show. Be sure to check it out. Have a great weekend, and thank you so much for listening.